Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everybody? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line I got my pick and pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
You know, it is what it is.
Oh, man. Poor guy. A banger in the paint. Rajan Walia, how you feeling?
I'm just exhausted for this past week.
Really? Yeah. Come on, man. We had like a few hot days, but there was a lull in the middle there, too.
Yeah, you're going to miss this week after, you know, free agency is basically over now.
Yeah, it's true, but so much refreshing and so much anticipation.
Let's just go into it. Kawhi Leonard is now a Los Angeles Clipper. Who broke the news? Chris Haynes?
Haynes or Shams, I don't know. It doesn't really matter now.
Whatever, sure. Late Friday night, we got the news. It was 2 a.m. Eastern time, so like 11 in Vegas, I guess. Paul George is now also a Clipper to go with Kawhi Leonard. And in return, the Clippers had to give up 5 first-round draft picks, Danilo Gallinari, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, your Canadian boy. I'd say this trade is totally worth it for 2 superstars.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. The Clippers had to make a big move, and especially with all the other free agents off the board at the time. And I think Kawhi made it clear that he wanted to play with PG. They gave up the future, but they got what they wanted for the next 4 years, and they didn't pass up on this amazing opportunity to get arguably the best player in the game and PG, who was an MVP candidate this year.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to miss Kawhi. I mean, that was an unbelievable season, obviously. And I mean, the Raptors championship still really hasn't hit me, so I can't imagine what this is going to feel like when this hits me in about a month.
Wait, you said the championship still hasn't hit you?
Not really.
What the hell are you talking about? How?
I don't know.
What are you talking about?
It's just so weird that the Toronto Raptors have won the championship. It just still hasn't really, truly hit me. I think one day I'm just going to start crying for no reason.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I think it's going to really hit you when the media outlets are going to be like, oh wow, the Boston Celtics are facing the NBA champs, Toronto Raptors. That's when it's going to hit me. Be like, oh shit, like they just won. Even though I went to the parade, the celebration after, it's a bit hard to swallow that the Raptors have been the best team last year.
And OG Anunoby will be like the headliner face on that game. It's like, what is happening?
It's going to be your new boy, Matt Thomas. Come on, show some respect.
Hey, welcome 99% true shooting percentage on open shots.
How is that possible?
He just does not miss when he's open.
Thanks. Wow, that's a revelation. All right, so now the Clippers are going to have a starting lineup of, I'm assuming, Patrick Beverley, obviously, Landry Shamet, Kawhi Leonard / Paul George at the 3 and 4, and then Ivica Zubac at the 5?
I think in the regular season, yeah, but I think ultimately they're going to be starting Jamichael Green in the playoffs once they re-sign him. He was a really good fit with them last year, and he played really well against Golden State in the playoffs, so I think they're going to play like sort of like Golden State did, where they just switch everything on the perimeter once they get that lineup intact.
Yeah, I wouldn't also be surprised if they decide to go with Patrick Beverley and then PG at the 2, Kawhi at the 3, Mo Harkless at the 4, and then Zubac at the 5, and then obviously later in the game have Harrell come in at the 5.
That's going to be insane on defense. How the hell does anyone score on that team? Like, score against this team, I mean.
I think you have to go with what the Lakers were doing and just go big and just destroy them on the boards, because that's the one area where they're going to be susceptible this year. Again, much like Golden State.
Even then, though, Harkless is a big dude. He's got a lot of length. Harrell is not, like, some scrub inside either, right?
No, but he is small. He's 6'7", right?
He's 6'7"?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like...
Oh my god, he's tiny.
He's smaller than Draymond is.
So, Paul George is the tallest one in the crunch time, like, five, I'm assuming. Yeah, Paul George / Mo Harkless.
Yeah, between those two, yeah.
Damn, what if you play ultra small and just play Harkless at the five?
I mean, you could do that. I mean, all those guys are really good rebounders. Kawhi averaged, what, like 9 or 10 rebounds in the playoffs, so it could work.
Yeah, and you know Beverly is not going to just be a pushover either, right? That dude's a real dog out there.
Yeah, and he's one of the better rebounding guards in the NBA, too.
I still think they're going to make one move. Like, it's not going to be a big move. It might be a move for depth, but I think they'll just get a bit more solidity at the 4-5 position, especially if they're going to load manage Kawhi. And also, PG's coming off that shoulder injury, which is kind of maybe the only asterisk I have with this whole the moves the Clippers made. It's just that injury history with Paul George coming off a shoulder surgery. And then obviously he had the broken leg, which is a couple of years ago now. So hopefully he stays healthy.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too concerned about his leg injury, but the shoulders, I think it's both shoulders, right?
Yeah, he's had shoulder injuries since actually all the way back until Indiana. And then I think he finally had surgery this year for one of them. And then he manages it with those like kind of like black little sleeves that he uses just to like help relax the muscles. We all know what we're talking.
The KT tape.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's a great trade. I don't know where it puts him in the West. Like the West is super competitive, and we can talk about Kawhi's move from that angle. But that's one of the best defensive lineups probably we've seen in a very long time.
Oh, they're the favorites to win the championship, no doubt. I mean, you hardly ever get a team where they have so much depth on the bench and, you know, beside these guys. And then you have two, I mean, Paul George is what, a top 10 when he's playing really well player, top 15 otherwise. And now they can also load manage him in that he's not going to have to score 27 points a game to where he always has his like February through May lull. So I think that he's going to be ready come playoff time because they're not going to play him in as many games this year.
Do you think that's why Kawhi wanted to team up with somebody like that? Like, obviously, he could have ran it back with the Raptors. They could have tried to repeat and whatever. But he would have still had the whole team on his back, right? Now he can actually spread out the scoring. You have Paul George, who can obviously create his own shot. You have Lou Williams, who is one of the best at creating their own shots as well, right? And then you have a bunch of guys who are scrappy defenders. I mean, in terms of fit, like, this might actually be a better fit than the Raptors are.
I'm not entirely sure about better fit. Like, it all depends on like who that tertiary scoring is. I think the one benefit with the Raptors is they actually had scoring like 1 through 5. Whereas in the scoring here is going to be a little top heavy, although the scorers are better. I think Paul George is like a natural scorer. And then obviously Kawhi is Kawhi on the Raptors or the Clippers. He's going to put up buckets. But the Raptors had Siakam, who could have put up points. They had JV at the start of the year. And Ibaka's been able to score in the NBA consistently. Siakam definitely stepped up. Like, they had a lot of tertiary scoring to help manage the load for Kawhi. But I think they're still going to make one more move. I wouldn't be surprised if the Clippers get someone. I don't know who's on their radar. But just to get a bit more depth. I think they lost a bit of depth, actually. In the trade and also this offseason, like, I don't see the Clippers as an extremely deep team, but maybe I'm just forgetting names at this point because I'm tired.
Now, when you have Lou Williams, Harrell, Harkless coming off your bench, that's pretty damn good. It's like, you know, top 8. And then plus Jermichael Green when he re-signs to top 9. I'm probably forgetting somebody as well. So they're a really deep team.
But wouldn't, like, I'm pretty sure Mo Harkless would start, or one of them would have to start. I guess no, you're Shamit's really relying on. Oh, true, Shamit. Yeah.
So you're going 3 deep off the bench, right?
Yeah.
At
maybe
least.
4 with. Yeah, maybe 4 if Jermichael Green resigns.
It feels like they can still use. I don't see Zubac playing a lot in the playoffs. Sorry to cut you off.
No, it's all good. It'll definitely be Harrell, right, who has to play in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think Harrell will still come off the bench just because it doesn't make a lot of sense to start him. I mean, they like having him and Lou Williams come off the bench together, and they work really well in tandem as well. So you have that pick-and-roll scoring when both those guys and Paul George and Kawhi go to the bench if they decide to do that. Or if they decide just to have one of them on the court at all times, then it's still going to be basically impossible to beat them.
they still seem really small, like up front. Like imagine them going up against Utah and having Rudy Gobert inside. You're gonna throw Harrell on them? That's like a 4 to 5 inch difference.
At least.
Yeah, that would be my primary concern. Is how would you
defend? Yeah, but teams don't really worry about guys like Gobert because they have no moves in the paint, right? Like their only move is to catch and finish, and if you put like even Kawhi or Paul George on him on a switch, he's not gonna be able to do that. He's gonna have to like actually make a move and take one dribble and do something with the ball. Which he's still not good at.
It's more for rebounding purposes. Right? Like Gobert's just gonna eat up inside.
I suppose, but I think when you have like wings that average 7+ rebounds a game, it doesn't really hurt you as much as, you know, Golden State showed. And plus, you can beat them down the floor as well. You have to look at the opposite side of things. So, like, if they don't get the rebound, you're able to tap it out to the perimeter, then, you know, you can start the fast break quicker.
But during the playoffs, though, it's a little harder, don't you think?
Yeah, I think if you have, like, you know, guys at your position that rebound extremely well and above average, you can make up for the lack of height.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah,
we've seen the last few playoffs, especially, like, quickness beats height.
I think the thing that makes this Clippers team just like very unique is they have those two wing players that can defend 1 through 4 at like the most elite level. Like they can take down two very efficient scorers on any given night if both Kawhi and PG are playing. And you can't really switch them on to an easier defender because, again, they're defensively, like they have, as we mentioned, like Beverly and Mo Harkless. Like they have players that can defend. And that's really going to limit teams like Portland, who rely so heavily on backcourt scoring. They'll limit teams that, like even the Rockets, in a sense, like they have players that can shut down James Harden.
Do you think that they're the favorites now?
Oh, yeah.
Raj?
Like the slightest, like if you had to put it on odds, I think they're like minus like 120 and everyone else is like right there at like plus 100. Like it's very close. They're not like head and shoulders above everyone else as everyone thinks.
So who else is close to them?
I think the Jazz are pretty close to them. Obviously, we have to see how that plays out, but I think they're very good. I also think the Rockets still aren't very far off. From them, I think the Rockets can score in bunches, and I think the Clippers will have trouble matching that the same way the Raptors might have had trouble had they played in the finals. And then I think also the Lakers, I think, are a little below, but they're going to be there just with two of the top five players in the league. So I think those two teams, the Jazz, the Rockets, and the Lakers, so three of them are right there, but below.
I think that the only teams that could really give them problems if they played in the playoffs are the Lakers and the Philadelphia 76ers because they have basically the two best big men in the NBA. And you just wonder how they're going to be able to match up with that, you know, in having Zubac starting if that's the case. I mean, you have to start him against Embiid, obviously. Against Davis, it's a different story. You just put Paul George on Davis, you put Kawhi on Davis, and sort of, you know, you're going to be running them at the ground in that case in a playoff series. So I think that's going to be the most interesting subplot when these teams actually match up is like how they match up against superstar big guys. And who knows, maybe like Zubac takes another step and he becomes like, you know, Zydrunas Logauskas or something and is able to play like 25 minutes a game.
That'd be incredible.
He's still young. He played pretty well last year too.
Was it his rookie year last year or is he like 2 or 3 years in?
No, I think it's his third year in. I think his first year he didn't really play. And then I think he was round pick, wasn't he?
I think so, yeah. Anyways, he just signed an extension with the team.
Yeah, so I mean, he signed for, what, like 4 years, 28?
32, I think. So he's making 8 a year. He's making as much as Lou Williams. How about that?
Oof. Yeah, and they already guaranteed Lou Williams' contract beyond this year, which is something that I don't think has ever been done before. So.
Oh, yay, Lou Williams finally gets paid $8 million. Come on, man.
Actually, you know what? On that note, like the only thing that I could see sort of bringing this Clippers team apart is Lou Williams not playing in crunch time, just because teams are going to go after him as like the only weak point if they decide to play him at point guard or shooting guard in those lineups. Because otherwise, if you go with like the Harkless lineup or having JaMychal Green in the lineup, you don't really have the weak spots on defense. But if you play Lou Williams, then teams are just going to go at him every single time.
Yeah, but then you just have to throw like good help defenders in there. I mean, hiding Lou Williams should be relatively easy considering you have three of the best five defenders in the league now.
Right? Yeah, you would think so, but at the same time, come playoff time, if you have a team that has five really good players on, it's sort of like, you know, what the Raptors did. So they play Utah, for example, you're not going to be able to hide him.
You don't think so?
No, he's really that bad.
Okay, is he worse than, like, DeMar?
Yeah, he's small, yeah. So, yeah.
True.
But the thing with Lou is he plays in spurts, and generally he's playing against other bench guys. Like you said, if Utah has their starting five out there and Lou's playing, then sure, like, you might want to not play Lou. But I think he really benefits on just playing against the second units, and his moves are very much perfected, even though, like, we all know he's going left. Like, it's been a trend for, what, the last 5 years, and no team really decides to stop it or knows how to. So I'm not too worried about that being the weakness. I just think the tertiary scoring besides PG and Kawhi is, like, it's just not proven yet. Like, I don't trust Mo Harkless to make a shot. Patrick Beverley's improved his three-point percentage, but I don't think he's, like, quite there yet to be, like, a consistent three-point shooter.
I don't think they have to make a move, to be honest. I think that, you know, the Lou Williams Harrell pick and roll as a second or third option, really, behind those two guys is enough. And then, like, all these guys that you're talking about behind them, like Harkless and Pat Beverley, they're going to be more open than they ever have been in the NBA. So their percentages are only going to go up.
Okay, let's move on. Josh, where do the Raptors go from here?
Well, I would say this season, if not the offseason, they're probably going to look to trade all these guys like Lowry, Serge Ibaka, Gasol. And if they're not able to trade them this offseason, I think they're going to be trading them by the deadline for teams that are looking to contend and looking to add one more piece and, you know, a guy that can play, you know, 20 to 25 minutes a game with Serge and Mark, and then a team that really wants to upgrade their backcourt and Lowry, because Lowry still has 2 to 3 good, you know, really good years in him, I think. Just with the way he plays. Like, he doesn't rely on quickness. He's just smart as hell. So I think a team like Dallas, for example, if they were able to, like, you know, open up the cap room, or if they just wait till, like, next offseason, I think Lowry would be a really good fit there. But ultimately, this team is going to get broken apart. If not this year, but next offseason, like, Masai's going to do a rebuild on the fly. And if they don't even trade the guys this year, I think Toronto's going to make the playoffs for sure.
Oh, yeah, they're not that bad to not make the playoffs. Right.
They obviously won't be a top seed in the East, but I think they'll be fighting for a playoff spot with, like, the likes of, like, Detroit, maybe Orlando. Like, they'll be in the playoff picture, definitely. I agree with you. I think they probably won't trade any pieces this offseason unless an offer that they can't refuse shows up. I think they're more going to be sellers at the trade deadline to teams that are really making that final playoff push, that want to add depth. I could see a situation where, like, Marc Gasol gets traded, especially because he's on such an expiring friendly contract. Like, a team, let's say if Boston's making a playoff push and the Raptors are out of it, I could see Boston picking up Marc Gasol for the year, especially if they still have a void at center. I think they're going to try to acquire pieces and then hope to land another big free agent next summer or the summer after. And I think we talked about this before, but Giannis seems to be that piece, especially with Masai's connections, that could be a potential target, which would be great for the city because he's not LA born. He doesn't want to play in New York. Like, he's from Greece, Nigerian born. He has that connection with Masai. I think Toronto would be a place where he would thrive, and it'd be good for the Raptors to have a new face of the franchise for the next 5 to 10 years. But I think that's what Masai's kind of gaming for.
Is there actually any proof of that, or are we just spitballing here? Like, I know we've talked about Giannis going to Toronto in 2021, but is this actually a thing? Because I haven't actually heard it anywhere.
No, I don't think it's a thing, but everyone just thinks Masai's a, you know, magician. And it makes sense with Toronto's cap space opening up this offseason. They're probably just going to wait and sign guys to one-year contracts, sort of like what New York did, and then just try to go all in for Giannis. And let's just be honest, like, all Raptors fans right now are hoping that the Bucks crash and burn the next 2 years.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Again, I don't know if there's any like hard evidence, but I think we're going to try to sign a superstar, especially with all that space and the recent success. And it's very hard to sell your team, sell your franchise, especially after a championship, if you like don't have a marquee player. And I think they're looking for one. And I think Masai's smart not to overspend. I know there was a not that we're going to get into it, but there was like a bit of rumor that there could have been a possible trade between the Raps and OKC. And you just didn't want to invest his money in the wrong superstar.
Wow, that's shade. That was so unnecessary, but I like it.
I had to bring it up. It was on my mind.
So the potential and obviously not real trade was basically Pascal Siakam and a bunch of other players, contracts, obviously picks, for Paul George and Russell Westbrook. This would have been like the main way for the Raptors to keep Kawhi, right? And then obviously it didn't go through because who the hell wants Russell Westbrook's contract? Nobody.
I don't think that trade was even possible, though. I mean, that's like $70 million worth of salary. And I don't know if Toronto would be able to like match that, plus give OKC what they wanted in terms of picks, because they already have some picks going out to different teams. So, I don't know. I think that whole talk was just like OKC trying to gain leverage on the Clippers, which they ultimately did, and got a war chest back from it. I mean, they got more than what the Lakers got for Anthony Davis, which is impressive.
Yeah, I guess so, man.
But, I mean, this upcoming year is going to be, you know, you have to watch for OG. I mean, he's the guy that really has to step up this year for the Raptors. And if he does, I mean, you got him and Siakam in your starting lineup. That's a really good starting point. And then next offseason, maybe they re-sign Lowry for a lower number, because why not, right? If he wants to stay and he wants to sign on for less money, then you go for it, I think. He's still really good. And from there, you know, you build up to 2021 and you hope that Giannis comes too.
Okay, let's hope. Yes.
I mean, us Raptors fans are used to rebuilding, so we're back in the same position as we were like for most of the 25 years of this franchise. So we're good.
But we have a championship.
Hey, yes.
You know, the championship was a high, banner. Obviously, but now we're getting back to what we're good at, sucking.
Okay, let's move on. Somehow, I don't know how this is going to work, but the Golden State Warriors acquired D'Angelo Russell in a sign-and-trade for Kevin Durant, who obviously made his decision to go to Brooklyn beforehand. Kind of nice of him, actually, to even like let this play out, right? This way that Golden State is not just left hanging with nothing for Kevin Durant, at least they get D'Angelo Russell back. And for maybe at least just for this year, this might actually be one of the more entertaining backcourts in the league, I want to say, between D'Angelo and Steph. I don't know how it'll work with Klay Thompson coming back at the end of the year, if he does, but I mean, for the first few months, this might be oddly entertaining and strange to see at the same time.
Yeah, like as you mentioned, I think this is one of those situations where ownership saw them lose Kevin Durant, and they're going into a new stadium. They have the highest ticket prices probably in the NBA. And they wanted to be able to sell something to their fans. That's how I view it. And this contract, like from a basketball point of view, I think it was a decision where everyone was kind of scratching their heads. Like, I don't see the fit. Maybe once they start playing, I see like the way they play and it makes sense. But I really don't think he's a good fit in that system and how they play and what they're building. And it's a lot of money to a young player. But I think they just wanted to fill up seats. And they felt that it was the best contract that they could get and sell something to their fans so that they're playing like 50 or 60,000 for the right to reserve their season tickets and then paying whatever season ticket fees are. So I think it was a decision by front office more than anything, not a basketball decision.
So two things. The first thing I thought of when I saw this trade was they're going to end up trading him at the deadline to a, you know, team that actually wanted to wrestle like the Timberwolves, which Mark Stein seemed to confirm like right after the trade happened that this trade was only to get value back in order to flip Russell for something else later on. But the second thing is I've seen some people talk about how Golden State is still a contender in the West. Do you guys still think that?
Hell no.
Yeah, I don't see it.
Definitely hell not.
No. I mean, when Klay comes back, they're going to be really good still, but I don't really see them being a contender because their bench is so weak.
Even Okay, say Kawhi stays in Toronto, OKC stays the same. They're still not a contender in the West. They're not as good as Houston is this year. They're not as good as Utah is for sure. They might be as good as like Denver. Come on, man.
Are we saying they're not as good without Clay or with Clay?
I'm talking about without with Clay. So like in March and April, they get Clay back, so you have those three guys together again. Plus you got Kevon Looney still.
Clay's not going to be the same player though.
You know, we said that in the finals after his hamstring injury. I'm not going to doubt the guy anymore. That guy's just a baller.
Also, his game doesn't revolve around as much athleticism.
No, but it requires movement, though.
Yeah, it definitely does. But I think from that type of injury, he doesn't use as much explosion as other players do. It's not like we're talking about Derrick Rose's game, and obviously didn't have the same injury history, but I think he'll be okay. Like he might not be the exact same, but I think he'll still be a very good player.
I don't know, man. I think his kind of game, like to have his kind of game, you need to be able to work off screens a lot, right? Like you're curling a lot. That's a lot of pressure on your knees.
It is. But we'll see. I think to answer your question though, I think without Clay, they're nowhere close to a play. Oh, they're close, but they're nowhere in the top five in the West. Like, they're probably competing with San Antonio for, like, one of the lower seeds. Especially because they're going to have to rely on Clay, on Steph having those, like, 40-point nights every night. And, like, even in the finals, he looked exhausted after that one game where Clay did sit out. He had a great game, but for him to do that night in and night out, that's just mentally exhausting. I think he'll put up great numbers. I think they'll be fun to watch still. But I don't think they're a playoff team. They don't have the depth. They don't have the scoring. But with Clay, I think they'll be a playoff team, but not a contender.
Yeah, it also depends on which kind of Draymond Green we get. Like, is he going to come back into camp out of shape and fat again and then have to play his way back into shape during the season?
No, there's no chance of that. He's going into a contract year. Man wants to get paid.
Oh, true. That's true.
He has to work on his three-point shot. Like, he has to get it at least hitting back rim.
He's got
to
empty that backpack, man. What's wrong with this guy? So... Do you think, Josh, do you think they're a contender?
Hell no.
Okay, good.
But I mean,
you raised a question.
They're
going to
be a tough
out
in the playoffs, though, if they like end up, you know, moving Russell for, you know, say Covington and, you know, a few picks or whatever. I mean,
Wiggins.
No.
You got to match Wiggins. You have to match the contract. That was just that. I know we joked about that, but like those two contracts match up pretty well in a trade scenario.
I mean, if Wiggins is going to succeed somewhere, maybe Golden State is the place.
Why?
Steve Kerr is a really good coach, and maybe I'll get the best out of him.
Yeah, and they could maybe use him more in the Harrison Barnes role.
You guys are very optimistic.
Oh, yeah. Of course, we're relying.
I'm out on this kid, man.
We're speculating on Wiggins. This is how low we've become.
I'm out on Wiggins just because he never plays for Team Canada, so fuck that guy.
I don't know, man. The fact that he didn't want to enter the dunk contest because he knew LaVine would win is kind of lame. It's like, oh my god, I've seen this guy dunking in practice. I'm out. You guys do your thing. I'm good. Like, really?
That just goes to show you, you know, the competition level with him, like his motor, as they say, is not where it needs to be.
Yeah. At least with T-Mac, when he was younger, he like still tried on the court. He just knew Vince was like, you know, the best dunker of all time. But what the hell, man? Wiggins is like he doesn't have it on the court. Yeah.
Well, he does when he plays against LeBron or OKC. So if a team can somehow mind trick him into playing those two teams every single night, make him think that they're, you know, he's playing against Paul George or LeBron, then he could average 30 points a game.
Why Paul George?
I don't know. For some reason, against OKC, he's averaged like 32 points a game in the last 3 years. So
yeah, it's some crazy stat line.
Oh, he had that like buzzer beater game winner too, eh?
I think he had two of them.
Like 2 years ago? Remember that one from like half court?
Yeah.
After Melo hit that wing three?
Yeah.
Man, I hate Andrew Wiggins. Ruined Melo's like last piece of highlight over the past 2 years.
But going back to actual D'Angelo Russell, like, do you think he's gonna be a good like fit in terms of, is he going to still put up good numbers? Is he going to help Golden State win games? Or is it like I said, is it just to like sell your team a bit of hope to the season ticket holders after they lost Durant?
I think it'll take a while for him to fit into the offense, but I think ultimately not only is this a move to, in order to get you know, more pieces down the line and trading him to a team that needs a point guard, but I think it's also to save Steph for the first, you know, 4 months of the year until Klay comes back. Because without D'Angelo Russell in the fold, I think that Steph would have had to do way too much, and it might, you know, break him down as the season goes on. You risk big injury in that way.
No, definitely. But who's going to be the primary ball handler?
Well, I mean, it still has to be Steph.
Yeah, I mean, it's still going to be Steph, but I think that Golden State has to switch around their offense from being, you know, a motion-type offense where Draymond handles the ball, like, all the time, and then run those little dribble handoffs or, like, you know, plays off the ball with Steph coming around screens to D'Angelo running a lot more pick and rolls.
Yeah, because, like, the thing that really confuses me is D'Angelo is not a really a motion guy. He's not an off-the-ball guy, and he's almost kind of like an ISO player, like, of the early 2000s. Like, that's more of his game.
Yeah, I saw a stat that, like, D'Angelo ran almost as many pick and rolls during the regular season as what Golden State ran the entire regular season. So that's pretty crazy. Two polar opposites, and now they're colliding, which is why, you know, most people said this doesn't make a lot of sense besides, you know, asset management.
Selling tickets, I'm telling you.
I don't think it's selling tickets. I think it's more so just, like, trying to get something back.
D'Angelo Draymond might actually be a really interesting pick and roll.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same type of thing. It's not, like, quite the same thing as Steph, because you have to, like, bring your big guy out to him and make sure he doesn't shoot from 30 feet, but Russell's become a really good off-the-dribble shooter, so you still have to bring a big guy up a little bit, and then Draymond
and
have a space.
He can blow by, too.
He's not really blow-by guy, though. Like, he's more of, like, the 10 to 15-foot range type of player, where he pulls up those little shots, so.
Yeah, so I meant blow-by to, like, a mid-range floater. All right, let's move on. Josh, I'm just going to keep ragging on you. Your favorite player, Jimmy G Buckets, is somehow in Miami after... I don't even know how he got there, to be honest. I still don't understand what trades had to happen. But he signed there for 4 years at $142 million. They maxed him out. Philly offered him 5 years. And he said, nah, I'm taking my talents to South Beach. I'm going to smoke cigars and play checkers with the locals.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that sort of reminds me of is, you know, the DeRozan trade, in that San Antonio probably could have got a younger piece back or more draft picks for Kawhi Leonard, but they decided that they wanted to continue to, you know, try to contend, even though they're not really contenders, obviously. But this is sort of the same thing where, like, I think Pat Riley in his last few years in the NBA just wants to see a team that makes the playoffs and competes in the playoffs. And I think ultimately they're also going to be the team that trades for Russell Westbrook. So I think those two together are going to be a real experiment.
So what did they actually have to trade away for this? Was it just Josh Richardson?
Yeah, it was just Richardson, I believe. They didn't trade any picks because they don't really have any left, I don't think.
I guess the Whiteside trade was a different one then, right?
I think it became like a four-team trade where, like, Myers Leonard went to Miami, and then Hassan Whiteside went to Portland, and then Richardson and Butler changed teams. And there was one other team involved, too. Like, one other team took on players as well. Actually, that was, who was it? The Clippers. They took on Harkless, and they got a pick back for it, too.
Yeah. What a confusing trade.
Yeah, that trade was delayed for a while, too.
It is no longer Wade County. It's Butler County?
Could be a thing, yeah. Honestly, the trade, like, I think Jimmy just got tired of playing in the winters. Like, I know I'm doing the TMZ scoop here, but, like, he's played in, like, he's played in situations where he wasn't the main guy. And now he is kind of the main guy in Miami, like, going back to his days in Chicago, like, Rose was really the main guy, and then obviously Rose got injured. Then he moved to Minnesota. He was playing behind Cat, and we talked about Wiggins enough, so I'll end it there. And then it was always Joel's team. Like, it wasn't Jimmy's team with Joel being one of the best centers. It was always Joel's team, and obviously Ben Simmons is coming up, and he could have got the same money, so it wasn't a really financial decision. It was just... he wanted to play in Miami because apparently he loved the way they sent off Wade. And I think he wants to be, like, the alpha dog, like, run the team, like, be the face of the franchise. The first name when you think of Miami Heat is going to be Jimmy Butler. It's going to be hilarious if they do trade for Russell Westbrook because he has the same fucking attitude. As you said, it's going to be a chemistry experiment for sure. I think he'll put up good numbers for what they gave up. I think they just got a bit better. But I don't think they're going to be a contender in any sense of the way.
Playoff contender, at least?
Yeah, playoff contender.
Yeah. Basically just enough to get them to be relevant. Sort of just replace Dwayne Wade's personality on the team, right? Just to have like another leader, so to speak. A guy who's always hungry, you know, has the skill level, but just isn't up there with like the Kawhi Leonard, KD tier of players kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And I think they also got more contracts off the book. Like, obviously, they had to pick up Jimmy Butler's. But I think they're slowly getting rid of players that have been overpaid, and they're trying to make their
salary. They still got a lot of those on the books. They got Dion Waiters and James Johnson. But they're expiring, and
they got rid of one.
Yeah, James Johnson's got a nice contract for a guy who plays, like, 7 minutes a game now.
He knows how to fight, though.
Yeah, well... I mean, that's only so useful here, guys. Come on. All right, let's go to Jimmy's former team. Raj, your boy, Al Horford. 4 year at $109 million with the Philadelphia 76ers. So obviously he opted out of his player option in Boston. There were a lot of rumors saying that a team has offered him 4 years at 112. Obviously, it's 4 years at 109, but a lot of those are incentives. Al Horford has just made this team even bigger than last year. Like, Raj, remember last playoffs how we were saying the Raptors were having such difficult times rebounding with this team? They couldn't really match up with their size. And now they added Al friggin' Horford to the team.
Yeah, they're playing the old style of NBA with, like, a big four and a big five. And they're massive. But they also did one thing that I think we talk about, but we don't emphasize. They made a player who had some success against Joel Embiid and Al Horford his teammate. So they made Boston weaker. They got stronger. And they're going to play a style that I don't think many teams play. Like, they're going to play inside a lot. I think spacing is going to be the issue, especially since they lost. We talked about J.J. Redick. They lost Jimmy Butler. Like, they really need to surround themselves with better three-point shooters, especially because Simmons isn't going to shoot many.
This is the year. This is the year that Ben Simmons has, or like attempts a free throw jumper.
Yeah, he'll have to. But like from Al Horford's point of view, like he got paid. He knew what he was doing. He declined $30 million. Not many players at his age do that. But he got longevity in his contract. Honestly, I think the Sixers are going to be one hell of a team to watch because they're going to play a style that we haven't seen in the NBA or haven't seen work in the NBA in a long time with a true number four. Like Al Horford is a conventional number four back in like 2005.
So that was pretty good. For me, there's two sides of looking at this. Is the first is, Embiid off the floor in the playoffs. Philadelphia just got destroyed. I think they were like minus 90 something points in the playoffs, in two rounds with Embiid off the floor, which is just astronomical. So they've fixed that now. And plus, they can load manage Embiid during the regular season, not have to worry since Horford has played center basically his entire career, even though he just wanted to play power forward. But the second side of things is they don't have a closer now, and now they're going to be relying on either Ben Simmons or Tobias Harris to be their closer. And I don't really think that teams are scared of either one of those guys because you can't really go to Embiid, you know, when it matters most because it's really hard to get the big guy the ball in that situation and expect him to be able to do something with it because teams just crowd the inside when the game's on the line.
Yeah, they're going to miss Jimmy.
Yeah, the closing aspect for sure. And, like, who's going to shoot the three? Like, they need to space the floor. And I know Joel Embiid took a lot of threes last year, and I think this year there's going to be a focus on him not taking as many. I wonder who's going to space the floor. Like, they had J.J. Redick, one of the better shooters in the NBA last year. Like, I don't know who they're going to replace that outside shooting with.
I mean, Josh Richardson shot, like, 36 or 37% from three, which is pretty good. And he should get more open looks this year, but he's not a quick-release shooter like Redick was, and he didn't really open up the offense like Redick can. So I think Redick, you know, going to New Orleans is going to be a big loss for them, obviously. But ultimately, I think it will come down to, like, will Ben Simmons take another step in his progression? and actually become a guy that is not afraid to get to the free throw line, especially in crunch time, and being able to make plays off the dribble when it matters. Because if he doesn't, I don't think you can rely on Tobias Harris to be that guy despite them paying him, you know, max money. Which, in looking back now, like, why didn't they just spend that money elsewhere? If you already have, you know, Al Horford playing the power forward position, which Tobias Harris is a better power forward than he is small forward, in my opinion.
But who would they have gotten, like, with that money?
I think you just go after shooters in that case, because I don't think you can rely on Tobias Harris to be your closer, which seems like they're going in the year thinking that they can do. So why not just give more, you know, Ben Simmons more responsibility and just get guys that can space the floor instead with that money?
Yeah, maybe. I also read something interesting, and I want to ask you guys, would you rather have, just for this Philadelphia team, for this year, not like long term, would you rather have J.J. Redick or Josh Richardson playing the two, just for this year, with his current roster?
Redick. Obviously Redick.
Yeah, but it's interesting, like Josh Richardson was a very good player, made huge leaps last year, and he got like more of the ball there in Miami, and I think it just built his confidence, and I think he'll do well in the role, but of course Redick is going to be missed for sure.
Yeah, I mean, what they were doing last year, I mean, it definitely worked in the playoffs, just going massive and having guys shoot over these, you know, guys who are like way bigger than what you would expect at their positions, having a bunch of like 6'7" plus guys at your position is tough to play against, obviously, in the playoffs. But again, with them, like, defensively, they're going to be amazing, but offensively, especially come playoff time, like, if you're going against a top-level team like Milwaukee, or if, you know, Brooklyn gets back KD, you need a guy that you can rely on in the fourth quarter, and I just don't see it for them. That's, like, their big weakness, and that's a really glaring weakness. Like, in the regular season, they might win 60 games, but, you know, come playoff time, I don't really think you can be running, like, triple handoffs without Horford in the last 4 minutes of the game, or, like, have Ben Simmons run pick and roll.
Imagine Al Horford, Joel Embiid, pick and roll.
Oh my God.
Jesus.
Al Horford's one of the slower players in the NBA, so that'd be like just incredible to watch his explosion if he decides to drive to the rim.
It's just going to be a pick and pop.
Yeah.
How good of a three-point shooter is Horford? Do we know what his percentage is?
Good for his position. I think he's like 34%, something like that, three-point percentage. But like he can hit an open shot, which is good. I think he shoots probably the same percentage as Marc Gasol.
Yeah, 36.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
That's not bad, yeah.
It's better than Joel Embiid shooting like 20%.
Yeah, and Joel Embiid's turning into like a volume three-point shooter.
He's turning into Russell Westbrook in there, man. All right, let's keep it moving. Raj, I'm going to stay with you for this one. DeMarcus Cousins has signed a veteran minimum one-year, $3.5 million contract with the Los Angeles Lakers.
Ugh. I feel bad for the dude. I don't even want to go into this, but like before his Achilles injury, he was set to make max money for his age and his contribution in the NBA. And like he was supposed to make, I think, somewhere between 80 and 110 over 4 years. And the past two years, he's made combined like $9 million. I feel bad for the dude, but you know what? It's a good depth signing for the Lakers. He's going to be in the limelight. Hopefully he can get healthy, showcase what he has. Also they have the history of him and AD playing together, which will, I think, benefit him just having played with AD in the front court. Like they know each other. They actually had good success in New Orleans, stats wise. And I think the Lakers picked up a good player at the price, like one of the steals of the season, as long as he can stay healthy and stay on the court, even if he ends up playing like 10, 15 minutes a game.
Wow. Steal of free agency, eh?
One of.
Ah, I don't know, man. There's no way he starts next to AD. So it has to be him off the bench. You're gonna start LeBron, DeMarcus, and then Anthony Davis?
I mean, Philadelphia's doing it, so if DeMarcus is healthy, why wouldn't you start
Please bring back the old big man.
You only have one defender in the front court then.
Yeah, but it's a matter of like managing egos at the same time, right?
What ego? He just came off the bench.
In the playoffs, though.
Yeah, that's different, though. You're playing for a championship-level team. This is not that yet. So, and plus, like, who's ahead of DeMarcus? Like, Kyle Kuzma, maybe? Or JaVale McGee? I don't think Anthony Davis wants to start at center either. I think he wants to be the power forward, so If you start JaVale McGee over DeMarcus, true. I think there's going to be issues in the locker room.
That's true. Damn, that's a crazy big lineup. And then you have Rondo and then Danny Green, who just signed for 2 years, $30 million in the backcourt.
I think ultimately, like, Quinn Cook's going to play more minutes than Rondo, especially when it matters.
No. Really? For spacing?
Oh, yeah. Because the lineups with LeBron and Rondo this year were absolutely deplorable. I think they had, like, two of the worst... I think it was, like, a top or bottom five worst two-man lineup in the NBA. I think they were, like, minus 90-something overall for the regular season.
Oh, God.
It was something crazy. But, yeah, those two, like, even though you think that they fit together because they're both basketball geniuses, the spacing just doesn't work with those two on the floor.
It's because LeBron's not a scorer, don't you know?
Yeah.
He's only, like, fourth all-time scoring, but he's not a scorer. Dick. I mean...
You know what? They have more players on their roster that are from New Orleans now that are going to be starting if Rajon Rondo does start, because then they would have the Rondo Cousins and Davis familiarity. Yeah.
I was going to say, they've already played together, those three. I mean, they weren't, like, the best team, but they were moderately successful.
Like, add LeBron to the mix, I think they're going to be very successful.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I can see all of them starting at once. I don't think Quinn Cook is necessarily... I don't think Quinn Cook's that good. How about that?
I think Quinn Cook is pretty solid as a backup point guard. I think he showed in the playoffs. He showed a lot of things in the playoffs, I think.
Yeah, but we said that about Ian Clark a couple of years ago, and look at him now.
Nah, that's different. Ian Clark was, like, primarily just a spot-up guy. I think Quinn Cook can run some pick-and-rolls, and he's a better shooter, too.
Is he really? I don't think he's that much of a better shooter than Ian Clark was, especially not with the Warriors.
Quinn Cook is going to play at least 12 years in the NBA. Ian Clark's going to be out of the league in, well, maybe even this year.
Hot take. Fine. Yeah, I'm not sold on Quinn Cook, but... I also find it kind of a bit, like, I don't know, hard to swallow that the Lakers were unwilling to get rid of Kyle Kuzma, but now he's going to be coming off the bench. Like, maybe it's just the way their lineup is, but I think they're really, like, sold on this guy, and they know that they're going to need him come playoff time. So I really do find it hard for him not to be starting, and especially with Danny Green playing the two, whether it's Rondo or Quinn Cook playing the point guard position. Like, I really think Kuzma's going to end up playing either probably the four, Anthony Davis at the five, and LeBron at the three. Like, that's how it kind of makes sense in my mind, especially because Kuzma's the player that they're going to need to show up big.
Also, good for Danny Green. 2 years, $30 million. Obviously, he announced it right after Kawhi, or the news came out about Kawhi and Paul George going to the Clippers. Get your money, man. Last year, for the last 4 years, he made $10 million a year. So, jacking it up to 15. His last, like, paycheck before it essentially, you know, his career is, like, on the decline, obviously.
Yeah, and he's a nice pick. Like, he was a great defender. He almost made defensive first or second team. I think second team All-NBA. So he adds some toughness to that team and some proven experience. He didn't have a great playoffs, but I think that signing for the Lakers was a good fit. I'm happy they were able to get some pieces around them. And I think we can talk a little about, like, what other pieces they picked up. It's kind of like a collage of players that I don't know exactly how they fit, but at least they have a roster now.
Yeah, so you got Rondo, Caruso, Quinn Cook, who we already mentioned, JaVale that we already mentioned, Kuzma's still there. Just a bunch of random dudes.
Yeah, like, I don't know how that's going to work, but they have Anthony Davis now, right? So
I guess that's all that matters.
Exactly.
Let's do this. So I'm going to give you guys five players. Let's pick two of them to actually talk about and their signings, because these guys are not worth, like, a lot of time. So in this group, we have Marcus Morris, who signed with the San Antonio Spurs for 2 years, 20.
Pass.
Taj Gibson with the Knicks, 2 years, 20.
Pass.
Bobby Portis, 2 years, $30 million.
Really, really pass. let's just not talk about him ever again.
Yeah, hard pass.
The biggest one out of all of this, Corey Joseph, 3 years, 37.
Okay, this is what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, go. Please, feel free.
What the hell, man? Like, where's the market for Corey Joseph? The guy can't even shoot. Like, I love him as a Canadian guy and guy who actually plays for Team Canada, unlike Wiggins. But at the same time, like, this guy's a backup point guard. You have De'Aaron Fox, who's going to be playing, like, 36 minutes a game. And you can't play these two together because, you know, Corey Joseph's not a good enough off-the-ball shooter. So why not just sign Quinn Cook for 2 years, $7 million, when he's probably a better fit? I understand Corey Joseph brings the experience factor, but what are they thinking? I mean, Harrison Barnes is the worst contract given out this offseason, and they try to top it with Corey Joseph. What is going on here?
Oh, this is incredible. Yeah. Remember how we kept saying that the Kings are, like, on the right path? They were doing something right again, like, for the first time in a couple of decades, I guess? Nah, this is back to being the same old Kings.
I mean, they have a lot of depth now. It's just they spent their money in a way that just doesn't make sense going forward. I mean, why give these guys long-term contracts?
Yeah, they handicapped them, and, like, I think the Kings brought themselves back to reality with this offseason. Like, they were on the trend upward. They're like, oh, maybe a playoff team. They're like, no, never. Let's go back to, like, the 13th to 15th spot here.
I don't know about that. I think they'll still make the playoffs. It's just, you know, going forward, like you said, like, their core is nice. Like, they have Buddy Hield, De'Aaron Fox, Harry Giles, and, of course, Marvin Bagley, who's going to be a really good player. But surrounding them with, like, all these guys who are making way too much money as role players just doesn't work in today's NBA.
You think they're going to be a playoff team?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I don't think for sure is as guaranteed as you think. I think San Antonio is going to be better this year. Obviously, the Clippers were the eighth seed. They're going to be better. Like, Denver is going to be in the equation. The Lakers are going to be a playoff team. Like, you know, eight teams only make it from the West, right?
Yeah, who falls out from last year?
And the Lakers are going to be in, right? So, like, that means one of the other teams is going to have to fall out.
How great would it be if the Lakers didn't make the playoffs? Oh, my goodness.
That'd be incredible.
Oh, absolutely.
That'd be amazing.
I would live for that. Please bring me to that. Bring me to March 2020.
Oh, man.
I mean, so maybe it's not guaranteed, but at the same time, like, I think they're a better team than they were last year for sure.
I think they could be equally as good. Like, aside from, like, Bogdan Bogdanovic, obviously Buddy Hield, like, getting better on their own. Like, it's more internal improvement than anything else.
I think Bagley's going to take a major step up this year. So I think that's going to be the thing that'll get them in the playoffs if that does happen.
Bags?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He's going to improve.
Yeah, he's going to be really good.
He's going into his second year? Sophomore year?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, sophomore year.
I don't think so then.
Well, he didn't get much playing time because they kept playing Bielica in front of him. And I think now he's higher on the depth chart. And
also, the one team that's going to drop out is OKC. And then you have Golden State who might drop out as well.
Right. Okay, so OKC, let's replace them with the Lakers for sure.
Yeah.
Unless something drastically happens.
Yeah, so in the West, we got to go the two LA teams, Utah, Denver. Then we have the Blazers.
Houston.
Houston, and then that's six already.
Yeah.
Then there's Golden State, Sacramento. I think Dallas will be in the contention as well.
Yeah, with Dallas, it depends what they do with the remaining $23 million they have. It's going to be interesting to see who they trade for.
They still have it. Oh, man. I forgot about that, about Dallas. Who could they get?
I mean, they could sign Oubre to one of those massive, you know, restricted free agency contracts and then hope that Phoenix doesn't, you know, match it. But I wouldn't do that if I was them.
I wouldn't take that risk. Phoenix is going to let him go.
No. Yeah, sign a one-year contract, and then hopefully you have some money next year to surround.
Yo, bring in Bobby Portis, man. Come on. I can't wait for all the Knicks trades this year. You know they're going to be moving a lot of guys. All right, the last guy on my list. I don't know if you guys want to talk about him, but Josh, it's your boy, Tomas Satoransky, signing with the Bulls for 3 years, $30
million. Hey, the Bulls had a great offseason this year. They got Thaddeus Young and Satoransky on three-year deals. That's solid, man. Good money, too.
Couple of solid veteran players.
Yeah, and Satoransky made like a big jump this year, I think, and he's a solid starting point guard now. And Thaddeus Young has already proven himself to be a solid, you know, guy that can anchor your defense. Like, he was really good in Indiana, and now you're bringing him to a team where, like, again, we've talked about this before, but they need grown-ups on that team, and they actually brought the grown-ups in on decent contracts, unlike Sacramento
or New York.
Nah, I mean, New York only has, like, guys on one-year contracts. The second year's all, like, team option, so.
Are they for all of them?
I think for all of them except for Julius Randle, who we've got 3 years.
Oh, true.
And I think in Julius Randle's second year, it's a player option or team option.
I think Randle has a player option in the third year, so. But he's not going to opt out.
Player option, yeah. one thing about the Bulls is, like, I don't think anyone's been talking about them, but I think they're the team that got better without making, like you said, any big moves, and they made the right moves. Like in a couple of years, they'll be like, wow, like, good thing they didn't sign Harrison Barnes to like $90 million or Corey Joseph, and like, they're stuck with this guy on the books. Like, they just made decisions that made their team better. Not a playoff team. They're still going to be the bottom dwellers in the East. But I think they made the moves that will help them, put them in a position where 2 or 3 years they'll be consistently a
playoff
team.
I think the Bulls have a chance to make the playoffs this year. I mean, that maybe that's a hot take.
Don't. Shut up.
Why not?
No.
What do you mean, why not?
They're adding two starting caliber players in the Eastern Conference, and the East doesn't really have a hierarchy right now.
Which got a lot stronger.
Congratulations, you added two starters out of five players.
Yeah, but you also have Zach LaVine and Markkanen, who are only going to get better. So,
congratulations, you have a worse version of Jamal Crawford. Get out of here.
Worse version of Jamal Crawford. Man, give Zach LaVine some credit. I'm not a big Zach LaVine fan, but he played really well last year.
He is Jamal Crawford, but not as nice. He's much, much more athletic. Like, prime Jamal Crawford, obviously. But the game is the exact same, and he's just more athletic, but he's not as good of a scorer.
You know what? I'm just going to come out and say it right now. The Chicago Bulls are going to make the playoffs next year.
Oh, my God. We need to start writing these down and then, like, calling you out on these. Because, like, this hot take is, like...
scorching.
It's absurd.
This coming from Raj, the guy who said the Raptors would lose to the Orlando Magic.
Yeah, scrub. Scrub.
No, I didn't say they're going to lose. I think I said the series... No, chill. Let's get the facts straight. I said the series was going to be longer than they wanted to. I thought
they were
going
to win. I love how you bet against the Raptors the entire way, and then you bet on the Lakers to get Kawhi Leonard. Oh, man. You're just taking this massive L the last 4 months.
yeah, I need to get off this betting thing. Yeah.
Oh. Anything else? Anybody got?
The Bulls are better than the Pistons.
Get the hell out of here.
Well, you think Derrick Rose is going to play more than 60 games? Yeah. Nah.
I guarantee you the Pistons win their regular season series.
Oh, okay. I don't think that matters.
I mean, they'll be the ones in the playoffs, not the Bulls.
Yeah, we'll
so.
See about that.
We will. We will see Blake Griffin in the playoffs again. I don't think we saw him this year, did we?
Play? One game, I think.
I thought he sat the whole way.
Yeah. No, the knee. He came back for the home games.
Yeah. See, the Bulls are worse, man. Get out of here. You're crazy, Josh.
We'll see.
All right. Anything else? Any other hot takes?
Go Bulls.
Okay. Thanks. All right. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. You can obviously find us on all the major podcast platforms. So we're looking at Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, Anchor, pretty much all the platforms. Obviously, we're on Twitter and Instagram at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.